This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about one of the most common afflictions of people in the United States. It really takes a major toll, but I bet you don't know very much about it. It is an under-recognized problem, and the treatments for it in conventional medicine, well, they're frankly lacking, but it is very amenable to natural treatment. By now, some of you astute listeners may have guessed that we're talking about fatty liver disease. We're going to talk to an expert. He's Dr. Robert Rountree. Dr. Rountree has the distinction of being an MD, but also he is an MD who teaches and trains MDs in nutritional and herbal pharmacology as part of the Institute for Functional Medicine, which is one of the go-to places for integrative practitioners to sharpen their skills and develop an arsenal of natural treatments to deal with a variety of diseases. He is a graduate of the University of North Carolina School of Medicine and completed a residency in family community medicine at the Hershey Medical Center in Hershey, Pennsylvania, certified by the American Board of Family Practice. And he's also a diplomate of the American Board of Holistic Medicine. So you got the best of both worlds in Dr. Rountree. And he is someone who's written many books on this subject. And teaches doctors. And so we're going to partake of his wisdom on this subject today. Dr. Rountree, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Hi, it's great to be on.
Okay, well, first of all, what are we talking about here? The fatty liver disease, describe it. And is it a common problem?
It's an extremely common problem. Here's the deal. It's not something that a person would know they had, unless they just happen to have some routine blood test done at a health fair or routine screening done by their doctor that then showed mild inflammation in their liver. That might be the only tip-off that they've got this problem. We've known for years that people who drink too much alcohol, which is generally more than about three drinks a day, that they would almost invariably develop a very similar kind of condition, which is an accumulation of fat in the liver that eventually leads to inflammation. So, you know, we've known that this was associated with alcohol for many years. What's new is an appreciation that many, many more people have the non-alcoholic version of this than we ever imagined. I mean, we're talking about possibly up to a third of the population has some degree of fat accumulation in their liver.
Mm-hmm. And how often is this missed? Because I think, from my experience is that when I see patients, I inform them that they may have fatty liver, and they say, well, my doctor didn't tell me that. And that's because we in medical school were trained that the average American probably has some degree of fatty liver disease, and it's no biggie. And, you know, what's the consequence? We'll just keep an eye on it.
Okay, well, that's what we've been told, is that, it's a benign, meaning a non-dangerous condition. We'll keep an eye on it. Now, how would you know if a person had it? Again, they don't have symptoms. It's based more on what we call in medicine an index of suspicion, meaning you've got to be looking for it in order to find it. Typically, and studies where they take random people, middle-aged people, for example, and just do liver ultrasounds, the same ultrasounds that you use in a woman to tell, you know, if she's pregnant or if she's far along in the pregnancy, what's the sex of the baby? Does the baby look good? It's the same technique, but when you apply it on the liver, it's actually pretty good for determining the amount of fat in the liver. And when you do this on a random population, and these are people that don't necessarily have any disease, you typically find at least 25% of people who are middle-aged will have this. But the big problem is now we're starting to realize that it's happening in children. It's even happening in children that don't have any obvious reason for it. And what do I mean by reason for it? Well, classically, fatty liver was thought to be a consequence of pre-diabetes, which is now more accurately referred to as metabolic syndrome. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, this whole cluster of symptoms that are related to insulin resistance, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, low magnesium, high triglycerides, low HDL. It turns out that that cluster of symptoms may all be related to fat accumulation in the tissue, not just in the liver. And now we're seeing that this is happening in kids, you know. So we know there's this epidemic of obesity in kids. We know there's an epidemic of type 2 diabetes in kids. Well, in parallel with that, there's this epidemic of fatty liver. Something like 25% of overweight kids have fatty liver. You know, we're talking 5-year-old children, 6-year-old children that have fatty liver. But if the child is obese, you know, really overweight, then we're looking at around 40% of kids having fatty liver. And the problem is that fatty liver by itself doesn't really cause symptoms, but fatty liver can progress into something called NASH, which is non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. And that if you hear that word hepatitis and you get a bad feeling, you should be getting a bad feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Because hepatitis means there's liver damage going on. And there's the whole problem, is that fatty liver can progress into fatty hepatitis.
Right.
So fatty hepatitis damages your liver.
And I think it's a little known fact, you know, if you do a pop quiz on people, you know, even knowledgeable, savvy medical consumers, and you say, well, what's the major cause of serious liver disease in this country, leading sometimes to liver transplantation? I think some people, smart people, would say, well, it's alcoholism. Alcoholism, you know, can destroy your liver. You develop cirrhosis of the liver. Alternatively, some people, you know, would say, well, you know, there's a lot of hepatitis, you know, people with hepatitis C. There's a lot of baby boomers who, whatever, they had bad transfusions or they had unsafe sex or they used needles and they got hepatitis C. So that's another major cause. But it turns out that those aren't the major causes, that it's this phenomenon, which is mostly a nutritional phenomenon, is now overtaking. It's really overtaking these other major causes of liver failure.
Journal after journal is now saying that fatty liver disease is the number one cause of liver disease in the Western world. The number one cause. So it's more common than alcohol-related liver disease. It's more common than hepatitis C. It's basically everywhere. And what that means is that family docs, you know, GPs, internists are all missing it. That includes me. I've been in practice 37 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be missing it. If I'm not doing an ultrasound on every single patient, which I'm not going to do, right? But unless I'm doing an ultrasound on every patient, that means I'm missing it because some of these people have normal blood tests.
Mm-hmm. Are there blood tests, by the way, that might be a tip-off to the presence of fatty liver, you know, ALT, AST? There's also a GGT test that maybe is a little more sensitive than usually tests usually performed.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the GGT, and it's a bit ironic because the GGT used to be part of a routine blood test.
Mm-hmm.
When I first went into practice decades ago, you could get this chemistry profile of your liver for $15. And it included a GGT. And somebody, some bureaucrat decided to get into the business and started telling us, hey, you're over-ordering tests, and we've got to unbundle
cost,
these
cost
tests
containment.
To do them separately.
Cost containment, yeah.
Yeah, we got to contain the cost. And then what happened is they took the GGT off, and then the price of that standard liver panel went up to about $250,
$300. Mm-hmm. That sounds like that guy, that guy's, what's his name, Skrelling or whatever his name was, the kid who like...
Martin Skrelling, right. Yeah.
You would find the drugs that are like obscure drugs that were orphan drugs and, you know, the really cheap drugs that you could jack up the price because of some loophole.
Yep. So I tell people if your doctor isn't ordering the GGT, you should ask for it by name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really shouldn't be that expensive. Insurance will cover it. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty sensitive indicator of liver inflammation. But so is the ALT. So you mentioned the... Mm-hmm. The standard liver enzymes, the transaminases, if they're up even slightly, that can indicate fatty liver. But they can often be normal in fatty liver, and the GGT may be a little bit more sensitive indicator.
Mm-hmm.
Other indicators you've got, if the person's got an elevated blood sugar, you know, if their hemoglobin A1C, the marker for average blood sugar over time, if that's gone up to, say, 5.9, 6.0, then I think you can assume there's a little fatty liver going on. And why do I say that? Well, they did a study that was published, I believe, last year, where they looked at offspring of people who had diabetes. So the parents had diabetes or the grandparents had diabetes. And they looked at kids, and somehow they talked the kids into the study into doing muscle biopsies. So they did muscle biopsies on these kids, and they found two things. They had insulin resistance before they were overweight, and they had accumulation of fat in their muscle tissue. To me, that is an indicator that fatty liver is the tip of the iceberg, that we're really talking about fat that's accumulating, you know, every place else in the body besides fat tissue, right? So, you know, we know that too much fat tissue is a problem, but if you've got too much belly fat, that means you've also got liver fat. That also means you've got muscle fat.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, here's another trick question. You know, you ask a relatively enlightened person, okay, fatty liver, what, from a dietary standpoint, what's the cause? It's dietary fat, true or false. If you eat too much fat, a lot of people think, well, the fat's going to go right to my liver and I'll, you know, get a fatty liver. Is that borne out by research?
Absolutely not. It's
okay.
Not the fat in the diet.
I was throwing you a big high-hanging curveball there that I wanted you to hit out.
You probably read the article, that I think it was in The Guardian about 2 weeks ago, written by three cardiologists that basically said, we've got to get away from this notion that fat is the problem. You know, that it's really
Dr. Malhotra in England.
Yeah. I think everyone should read that article.
I posted that on Facebook. Yeah, it was very, got a lot of hits. Yeah.
Really, really good. And, you know, we've known how to induce fatty liver for 2,500 years. And what do I mean by that? Well, they used to, create fatty liver in geese and ducks.
Mm-hmm.
In ancient Egypt,
right?
And how do they do it? By feeding them grains, by force feeding them grains and especially corn. So, you know, how do you make foie gras? Foie gras is fatty liver. You know, the French still do it and make pâté from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy. So number one, you overfeed. So you give too many calories and you don't let the animals, the birds exercise. And then you load them up with calories. And what are the calories from? They're from grains. Now, I'm not saying grains are the problem specifically, but dietary sugars and carbs really do seem to be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to pick one that's driving this epidemic, because, you know, we haven't always had a situation where 25-30% of the population had fatty liver. This is a fairly new development.
Mm-hmm. This is not a paleo problem. This is a problem of modern civilization.
It's a problem of modern civilization, and over and over again, people that have looked at the data have said if you had to pick one dietary factor that seems to be driving the epidemic, it's high fructose corn syrup.
Mm-hmm.
High fructose corn syrup. These are not just, you know, fringe nutritionists that are saying this. This was reported in the Framingham Heart Study. This was reported by a doc who runs the Jefferson Fatty Liver Center at Jefferson Hospital in Philadelphia. I mean, these are very recognized, well-recognized experts that are saying it's fructose and specifically high fructose corn syrup that is the single biggest cause of this fatty liver epidemic. Scary thought.
Indeed. And so, you know, it's ubiquitous. It's added to a lot of foods. You find it in ketchup. You find it in, you know, all manner of prepared and processed foods. But we massively infuse it into the populace by using high fructose corn syrup as the leading sweetener in sodas and in sweetened juices.
Yep. Yep. So people get it everywhere. They're exposed to a lot more than they think. And it doesn't take that many drinks every day of a high fructose corn syrup sweetened beverage to cause a problem. You know, a few drinks a day, that's really enough to drive this, especially if the person is under exercising. So when I say this to people, they go, wait a minute, fructose is a sugar, you know, sucrose, white sugar, it's a sugar. How does a sugar affect fat in the liver? It turns out that a big chunk of the fat that accumulates in the liver is actually made in the liver itself. So there's a process called de novo, meaning new, lipogenesis, de novo lipogenesis, and there are a number of papers written on this. And there's several enzymes in the liver that are responsible for de novo lipogenesis, and those enzymes are driven by dietary fructose. So when you eat fructose and high fructose corn syrup, it turns on the genes that turn on the enzymes that actually produce more fat, and that fat then accumulates in the liver. So it's not dietary fat at all, right? Dietary fat is a minor player in all this, and you'd really have to eat a huge amount of dietary fat to be equivalent to the impact that fructose has on the liver.
There's another dimension of this, and this brings in the concept of the microbiome, which is important not just for digestive problems, gas, bloating, IBS, but it seems to be such a pervasive underlying theme of so many diseases. They recently linked Parkinson's disease to imbalances in the microbiome and dementia. And now I see on my Science Daily of yesterday, headline, stool microbes predict advanced liver disease. There's a study, it just came out, you know, maybe you've already seen it, University of California, San Diego, is that in non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, they detect major disruptions of the bacteria in patients' stool. There's a characteristic profile, a dysbiosis. Can you speak to that issue?
Yes. Well, you know, years ago, your friend and mine, Leo Gallen, was talking about this condition called leaky gut.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically laughed out of the auditorium by the mainstream, you know, who all said, oh, this is quackery, there's nothing to it. And now you can't really pick up a medical journal that doesn't have some reference to leaky gut in it. So it turned out that Leo had a crystal ball that allowed him to see years into the future, and to realize that this is going to be a huge problem. So why am I mentioning that? Because if you've got unhealthy bacteria in your gut, they cause low levels of inflammation, and that inflammation affects the connections between the cells that line your gut wall and open them up. And when they open them up, it allows fragments of the bacteria, lipopolysaccharides, to get into the bloodstream. And that sets off systemic inflammation. And the systemic inflammation seems to play a role not just in fatty liver, but in its progression. So I mentioned earlier that, you know, the real issue with fatty liver is not fatty liver per se, but the fact that it's fatty liver is a setup for progression to this NASH, which is hepatitis. And that hepatitis damages the liver to the extent that people end up needing liver transplants. In fact, people are saying that that NASH is going to be the number one indication for liver transplants in the next 20 years.
Wow. And of course, with the gut-liver connection, I mean, there's a major superhighway going from the gut directly to the liver.
Yep.
That's the first pass effect. The liver detoxifies things that you take in nutritionally and also detoxifies the bad things that come in, the poisons, the toxins, the medications. It's through the portal vein. The portal vein goes right from your
yep.
gut to your liver. And so I guess if you have a toxic waste dump in your GI tract,
yep.
that's going to affect your liver and cause inflammation and damage and cause this problem to get worse.
Well, some of this is theoretical, but that's how the experts are putting it together. They're saying if you've got dysbiosis or you have SIBO, if you've got overgrowth of bacteria or other microorganisms in your small intestine, then, again, that causes leaky gut. And when you have leaky gut, that's a setup for chronic inflammation. And the liver is the main recipient of that inflammation. Part of the reason we know that that's true is there was one study where they measured something called C-reactive protein. I'm sure you've talked about that on your show.
Inflammation.
Which is a generic marker for inflammation. And so they looked at a group of people that had been diagnosed with fatty liver with ultrasound, and they measured their C-reactive protein, and they found that if they followed their CRP over the years, then people who had higher CRPs had greater inflammation in their liver, which I thought was pretty profound, right? And what is one of the major contributors to high CRP is having dysbiosis that sets you up to having this metabolic endotoxemia.
So the implications of this are, fix the gut. And how do we do that? With prebiotics and probiotics, fiber in the diet, less in the way of sugar, which promotes bacterial overgrowth. What are some of the ways that we can address that?
Believe it or not, there are actually studies for mostly in animal models where they take the animal, they induce fatty liver, and they put them on prebiotics and probiotics, and they've actually been able to show that it decreases the amount of fat in the liver. So this isn't just a theory. They've actually been able to show this. I think one study used Lactobacillus reuteri with guar gum and inulin, and they actually showed that the liver fat decreased as a result of giving them probiotics. I mean, who would have ever imagined that would be a treatment for liver disease? So you're absolutely right. There was one study with rats where they induced fatty liver, and they gave them a prebiotic called partially hydrolyzed guar gum.
Mm-hmm.
Now I remember using guar 30 years ago for diabetics. We had these little guar crackers that people chewed on.
Mm-hmm. It fills you up. It's sort of like a sponge-like effect, and it kind of produces satiety when you add fluid. It fills you up.
It fills you up. There was some pretty good studies on it for lowering blood sugar. The problem was that it was really unpalatable.
Yeah.
And so this company, I can't remember where they're out of, but they it might have been Japan, developed a form of the guar gum where they break it into pieces, and that makes it more easily absorbed. So it's called partially hydrolyzed guar gum. I actually take it myself because it's a terrific prebiotic.
Is there a brand name? You can mention it if you want. Is there a brand name for that?
It's called Dunfiber.
Okay. Okay.
It's called Dunfiber, and there's a product that Thorne Research makes called Enteramend.
Okay.
That was actually designed for leaky gut and gut inflammation, and that's the main fiber that's used in it.
Okay, I'll take note of that because I'm expanding my dispensary and looking for more and more tools in my repertoire to address this problem, because we see more and more patients with some form or another of this. Okay, let's pause now, because we divide these podcasts into two parts, as our listeners know. And when we return, I want to focus on specific supplements that can address this, because as we'll discover in part two, there is no successful specific medical therapy for this. They're looking for the magic bullet drug to treat NASH, but they haven't found it. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment with our guest, Dr. Robert Rowntree. The subject, fatty liver disease. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.